Hello and welcome to another ad hoc meeting of the Corona Investigative Committee, which was founded in July 2020 in order to investigate the coronavirus situation and the consequences of the lockdown. Today we're talking to Roger Hodgkinson from Canada, and they're very interested in learning what he has to say about the current situation.
Roger, as I said, the first time I heard you talk was about the PCR test, and now the second time I heard you talk was about the shots, the jabs. And you're saying something really important is about to happen or is happening already?
Well, I'm very concerned about the vaccination of children, which is currently underway, because of certain scientific issues that result in my blowing the whistle that this could be a very serious complication of vaccinations. But before I mention that, Rainer, may I give a brief summary of my credentials?
Of course. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to be impolite. Of course. We have to know about your background, of course. Sorry.
I'm not saying that because I find it a bit pompous, actually, doing that. But I'm a pathologist by training. My basic medical degrees were from Cambridge University in England. And I did my pathology training in Vancouver, British Columbia, following which I've had leadership roles in many areas of pathology, both provincially and nationally. I've been the assistant professor in the University of Alberta doing a lot of resident teaching. I've been the president of the Provincial Association of Pathologists. I've been the chairman of a Royal College committee in Ottawa that sets the annual examination for pathologists to make sure that they're safe when they're released onto the general public. So I've done a lot of stuff. I've run a big commercial lab, automated lab that cranks out all the results for your GPs. And I'm currently the interim CEO for a biotechnology company in North Carolina that's heavily involved in DNA sequencing, about which I know a fair amount. So those are my basic credentials, but I'm more proud of another credential because I was the honorary chairman of a major NGO in Canada that was tackling big tobacco over a couple of decades and achieving significant success in the political realm of how to constrain very predatory marketing of big tobacco, in particular how they focus on children. So that you might say is a segue into children and COVID. Here are my concerns in detail, unfortunately. The Pfizer submission in Japan has just been translated. And it is a great concern because they wanted to see the distribution of the body of these lipid nanoparticles in the vaccine. And they found, much to their surprise and everyone else's surprise, that there was a huge concentration of these lipid particles. We're not talking about the virus here or the mRNA. We're talking strictly about the localization of the particles. A huge concentration in the ovary. Now, this was in rats, all right? And obviously, you can't do these experiments in humans. But it points out that there is a substantial concern that the mRNA vaccine could, in females, result in sterility. And it's the old story of you don't know what you don't know. And the reason why clinical trials for vaccines typically go on for 4 or 5 years, because you cannot, last time I checked, pregnancy takes 9 months. And so you obviously cannot check for fertility issues if you're doing a trial for only a few months. But that's not the end of it. On the other side of the coin, you might say, the spike protein that's being produced intentionally by this vaccine in some people will escape into the circulation and create these thrombotic events that we're all very familiar with. But also, and that's because of the ACE2 receptor coating the inside of every blood vessel in the body. Mm-hmm. So the specific receptor for the spike protein, the ACE2 receptor, is very widely distributed in the body. But here's the point. It has the highest expression in the human body in the placenta and the testis. And the small intestine as well, by the way. But for the purpose of this argument, to have such a high expression of the specific receptor of the spike protein in the testis is obviously additional grounds for concern for male infertility. So I'm pulling those two strands together to say, look, children don't need this vaccine. They're not dying of the condition. Even if they get it, they brush it off. So on the one hand, they certainly don't need it. And on the other hand, administering it to them without need in the context of these significant potential fertility issues, that is, as I have stated, state-sanctioned child abuse. The consequences could be just unbelievably tormenting. I hope I'm wrong. That's the whole purpose of clinical trials, to find the unexpected. So I sincerely hope I am wrong. But until it's proven to be wrong, vaccination of children should stop now, today, in its tracks, because it is so enormously risky.
That, Roger, is precisely what Professor Luc Montagnier, who we interviewed a few days ago, was asking us to do. He said he was almost desperately trying to find a way to legally force the companies and the governments to discontinue with this probably extremely dangerous practice, because we know nothing. There's three questions that you usually ask. Is it necessary, the so-called vaccination? We don't think it's necessary because there's herd immunity already. Plus, there's alternative treatments that are not dangerous. The second question, of course, that's the two basic questions that you try to find out about during the clinical trials, is it effective? And the third question is it dangerous? Now, you're pointing out that these lipid particles can cause serious damage. I don't think anybody has pointed this out to us before, but all of the doctors who we're in touch with are saying, even though there's no clinical study yet, but this is the information we're getting, are saying between 30 and 50% of the people who get vaccinated, who get the shots, and it doesn't matter which one, have, if you check the D-dimers afterwards,
yes,
they're up. And that means there's some problem with blood clotting.
Yep.
And that's what most of the other doctors who we talked to were most concerned about. But this is an additional thing that points in the direction of there may be a serious problem with sterilization, both of women and men.
But it goes even deeper than that. There are two groups within MIT, major institution. I'm not sure if you've been following that in the journals, but there's a vigorous debate going on now within MIT with two opposing groups. One group believes that the mRNA can get into the permanent DNA by reverse transcriptase, and the other group doesn't believe that that's possible. Now, the reason that is also of supreme importance is that that is transgenerational. That would then be passed on. Now, we don't know right now the outcome of that debate, but it's serious people with their reputations on the line, and it's MIT. It's not some rinky-dink place. Mm-hmm. So you've got to take these potential threats very seriously before you continue vaccinating children. But let's talk a little bit about the ACE2 receptor and the vascular attack, Rainer. Mm-hmm. What many people don't realize, I'm a pathologist, so I've looked at thousands of scrapings of the endometrium and so on. I can assure you that the most lush, the most fragile tissue in the entire human body is called the lining of the uterus, the endometrium. It's intended to be lush, soft, and welcoming because that's the destination for a fertilized ovum. That tissue, that endometrium, as we call it, is exquisitely vulnerable to vascular attack because it is so fragile. The blood vessels are incredibly thin. And it doesn't take much imagination to appreciate that any vascular attack, quite apart from the thrombi in the brains and the legs and other places, the endometrium is exquisitely vulnerable to a vascular attack. And not only that, but the ACE2 receptor in the endometrium increases, its expression increases with age. Now, we've heard about, you know, women getting their periods, perimenopausal, postmenopausal women, suddenly getting their periods. Well, here's the probable explanation. Because of that targeted attack on the lining of the uterus by the spike protein that in some people gets out into the general circulation in much higher concentration than in other people.
My God.
Would this point to, the transmission from vaccinated to unvaccinated? Because there's been rumors about, that women getting their periods kind of unexpectedly out of the order.
It's a very brave physician who sloughs off thousands of women and says it's all in your head. Because it needs to be investigated and shown to be implausible. But there again, it's very interesting, of course, that in some of the submissions to the FDA, I think it was Pfizer's submission, they were talking about the need to potentially report these events.
Yeah.
But separate from the reporting system, directly to the trial coordinator. Here's some disturbing, a partial hypothesis for that needs to be investigated. During the SARS epidemic, it was discovered that the SARS virus itself located heavily in sweat glands. Now, if there is expression of the spike protein in sweat glands, if in fact it locates in the sweat glands, we don't know. But the SARS studies would suggest that it certainly should be looked at in the context of what's now being called contagious vaccinosis. It's got a name. Mm-hmm. If in fact the spike protein locates in sweat glands, it needs to be excluded that it's not getting aerosolized in sweat and inhaled by bystander.
So that's how that will work. Now I get it. Because I had a hard time. We spoke to a few people, including our own chief scientific advisor, Professor Ulrika Kemmerer, and she says, until I have real evidence, I can't go forward with this and tell you anything about it. But what you're saying right now makes a lot of sense.
But there's a problem, and it's called dose and entry. This process, let's assume for a moment that indeed spike protein is being aerosolized from sweat. The multiple steps involved to get it to a bystander results in a progressive reduction in dose that an individual would experience. And it would have to get entry into the body through the upper respiratory tract, where the receptor for the spike protein, you know, the virus gets in through the same receptor. And here we're talking about the spike protein itself getting attached to the ACE2 receptor in the upper respiratory tract. Okay, so let's assume that happened. It wouldn't typically get beyond that barrier into the body.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it did, it would be in very, very low concentration. So it's only a partial hypothesis, but it could be very easily disproven. Would you like me to tell you how?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's very simple, actually, and it should be done just to show that it doesn't happen. You put someone in a hermetically sealed room for 2 weeks to show that they're not coming down with COVID. And you're taking samples of their sputum, their nose, their urine, their sweat for 2 weeks. And you show those samples are all kept aside in this room. And then that person injects him or herself with the vaccine. And then you stay in that room for another 2 weeks and you're sampling again the air, the sweat, the urine, and so on, to see if you can find spike protein. It's really very simple to do. And that would put to rest the theory of contagious vaccinosis. And it's not being done, to my knowledge, and it's a very simple thing to do.
I remember reading in that, I think it was from Pfizer, in their report, what they're calling this secondary adverse reactions, right?
Yes.
So they're expecting or they're afraid of something like this might happen.
Quite. Now, I'm assuming that submission wasn't doctored, that it's the original one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But assuming it wasn't doctored, they were envisaging the possibility of unvaccinated people being affected by vaccinated people.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense as far as I'm concerned.
Quite.
And
it's very clever, actually, that they were thinking that far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably aware of the evidence from the SARS epidemic about localization in sweat glands.
Mm-hmm.
And is this something that's often noticed with other vaccinations, like measles or something? Does that happen?
No, it's never been reported, no. No. And that's to be distinguished, of course, from what's the word for it? There's another scare tactic out there. There's a type of vaccination in animals where you make something intentionally infectious, so it's passed on between generations to create immunity the natural way. There's a special name for that. It just escapes me. But no, we're not dealing with that process here. I mean, it's not related to those animal vaccines at all. Progressive vaccination, I think it might be called.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, it's unrelated. But the big point I'm making is don't slough off thousands of women as nuts if you've not done the experiment and if Pfizer was thinking of it as a potential consequence.
Yeah. Well, the producers of the vaccines, I think in this case, Pfizer, they claim that the efficacy of their vaccine is 95%. But there's something not quite right with that, because there's two different ways of looking at this. One is the relative risk reduction. That's what they're using. And the other is the absolute risk reduction. And if you look at that, then you're all the way down to 0.85% efficacy. Correct. What do you think? What do you make of that?
Well, to be honest with you, Ryan, I've not been following those statistics. They are complicated for my non-mathematical mind to get my head around, I'm afraid. Statistics were never my strong point. But let me make a point about statistics, if I may. Statistics do not apply to individuals. You may be it, right?
Yeah.
And if you're it, it puts a very different complexion on the event, does it not? And so whenever you hear these numbers, people get immune to zeros. They don't know what zeros mean anymore. The statistics are too complicated to understand. Mm-hmm. So I try to dumb it down with an analogy that people do understand. If you could imagine let's say, for example, your granny, and I'm your doctor, and I walk in to see you one day, and I say, "Hey, granny, hate to tell you this, but it's true. You do have COVID. And you've got about a 4 times increased risk of dying of COVID than you had with the flu that you had last year. You remember when you had the flu last year? You survived it very nicely, didn't you? But it's 4 times more risky, this one." And granny would say, "Hey, doc, that sounds pretty serious to me. What are we going to do about it?" On the other hand, I could walk in and say this. I'd say, "Hey, granny, you know what? It's true you've got COVID. Yeah, but listen, it's nothing to really worry about. You remember when you got the flu? You had a 99% chance of surviving. And now you've got a 96% chance of surviving." And granny would say, "Hey, doc, that sounds pretty good to me. Can I go home now?" That's how statistics are being morphed constantly to drive fear instead of to minimize fear.
Yeah.
And it's a sleight of hand constantly. The only numbers that we can possibly rely upon are deaths. And even the deaths are being morphed, certainly in the States, because you get paid more if the COVID test is positive. So we've got so little to go on. We don't know the prevalence of COVID-19 infection in a population wide. Mm-hmm. Those antibody studies are still being contested. We don't know the prevalence of it, first of all. Secondly, we don't know if people are dying with COVID or due to COVID. And that all, of course, is predicated on the PCR test of, you know, a little strand of RNA being found in your nose and being attributed, it being called a case, which, of course, it's no such thing. I like to tell people that... To put it in the vernacular, I like to tell people, you know what? In your snot, you've got lots of bugs, lots of viruses. And so what if you've got a little tiny strand of one called COVID-19 and you're feeling perfectly well? So what? It's called snot.
That's precisely what Dr. Vodak keeps telling us and our viewers. He doesn't understand, and we don't either, why all of a sudden viruses are made into this extremely dangerous, well, now it's a pandemic, but we've been living with viruses all for hundreds of thousands of years now. And we've been, our immune system has been perfectly capable of dealing with these viruses. And what he explains is, even if you get a shot against one of the viruses, then another one will probably take its place. So it doesn't really change much. That's how he tries to explain it. Because most of the viruses that are around, and he doesn't know of any that's different, are viruses that we can cope with. Unless, of course, our immune system is not intact anymore. So that's what he says. That's what we should concentrate on. Strengthen our immune system by not eating junk food, by exercising, you know, the usual. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know this.
Yeah, vitamin D is obviously very important here. But, you know, this sounds awfully callous to say this, but it's just evolution in action. Mm-hmm. You know, we may be weeding out the people with the poorer immune systems, which is the way evolution works. Yeah. We don't want to concentrate. And listen, this isn't a eugenics. I'm not trying to kill people off here.
I know that.
I'm just saying that the end point of this from an evolutionary perspective is building a healthier human race, mm-hmm. one that's more able to reject these viruses that will come along constantly. And of course, that brings up the whole mutant scare too, yes. doesn't it? You know, as Mike Eden said, you know, the percentage of the genome that's being mutated is no more than 3%. And so our immune system, miraculous as it is, will pick up the 97% commonality of the rest of the mutants and be very effective at attacking these mutants. It's nothing to be scared of. And I also like to say, if one of these mutants happens to be provably more transmissible, so what? That's a good thing. It increases natural transmission the way we've done it with the flu and every other viral epidemic. Natural transmission is a much better way of creating immunity than some artificial vaccine. It also happens to be immediately available and dirt cheap.
I think that's not quite the way Knut Witkowski put it, but almost. He said the exact same thing. He says everything that the governments have done is counterproductive. Because if they had let the virus spread, the whole thing would have been over in May of last year, or April of last year.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely correct. This is a pseudo pandemic. I've called it a hoax elsewhere. The virus is real. It's been cultured and sequenced and all that good stuff. Mm. But the reaction to it is politics playing medicine. And that's a very dangerous game. They should stick to their knitting. And let real medicine, real science, drive the bus. But instead, they're basically trying to cover their backside constantly. You know, having been shown categorically, inescapably obvious that what they were doing wasn't working. Then you don't do the same thing over and over and over again for an entire year and expect the outcome to be different. Einstein, I think, has something to say about that.
And in fact, we don't even know if the dead people labeled as COVID death were really killed by the virus. I mean, we know that there were a lot of comorbidities, and so we don't even know. I was wondering, have you looked as a pathologist at COVID death? People people who died from the vaccination, after the vaccination?
I've not personally been involved in any autopsies or reviewing their histology. No, I've not. But what you bring up is a medical concept that we don't understand in 2021, and it's called frailty. Old people are frail. It's understood. All their systems are frail, their heart, their lungs, their liver, their kidneys, etc., etc. And we can measure that. But we can't measure T-cell immunity. We can measure immunoglobulins, but that's a minor part of this story. It's really the T cells that are involved in getting rid of viruses. And we can't measure that easily at all. So the presumption is, of course, that as you get older and all these organ systems fail, that your immune system is also failing very silently. You're not aware of it until, you know, the what's it called, the dead man's friend, you know, pneumonia comes along and takes you away. But the point I'm making is this. You have these people with multi-system disease as they're on the cusp of death, a month or two away from death. They're handling metastatic cancer, serious heart disease, renal failure, severe diabetes, etc., etc. And it's affecting all their organs simultaneously. And they're on the cusp of death. Along comes a little brush on the cheek, a little infection with COVID, and that's enough to start the death spiral. That doesn't mean that you died due to COVID. It meant that it was the last straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
And it's totally inappropriate to label that death as due to COVID.
Yeah.
We don't understand frailty, how these systems interact in those final months before death. Very complex. We don't understand it. But what we do know is, if you take a macro example, you isolate someone with Alzheimer's and they'll die faster. Just as a gross example of, you know, how a little thing can cause death. And we don't understand it. But it's a grossest distortion to pad these statistics by saying that someone died due to COVID simply because they had a positive PCR test that we all know is utterly useless, and they were dying of something else. It's very interesting, is it not, that the statistics show that deaths from heart disease and cancer have dropped dramatically. Well, let me assure everyone listening, as a pathologist, I can tell you with categorical certainty, lockdowns do not cure cancer.
No. On the contrary. This is what we heard. There's one pathologist, now professor emeritus, his name is Puscher from Hamburg University. And he performed over 100, maybe close to 200 autopsies, postmortems. And the end result, in the meantime, he's changed his mind. In the meantime, he's gotten vaccinated. We don't know what happened. But back then, this is about a year ago, he said, all of the people who he performed autopsies on were past their average life expectancy, and they all had comorbidities. Almost no one died of or due to COVID. Same result from studies, I think, that were performed in the meantime, both in Bergamo, which supposedly was one of the hotspots, and in New York City. 94% of the people who allegedly died of COVID or due to COVID died of completely other reasons. Same, I talked to a virologist in Sweden. His name is Björn Hammarskjöld. And he told me 85% of the people who allegedly died of COVID died of completely other causes. So there is your concept of frailty, probably, because that is what most of these people have in common. That's, I mean, of course, this is an especially vulnerable group of people, and they do deserve special protection. But it doesn't, this does not make it plausible that you have to shut down the entire society. It makes absolutely no sense. On the contrary, all of this, as Knut Witkowski pointed out to us, was counterproductive.
Well, as Bhattacharya has said, and if I could paraphrase his statement, you know, lockdowns are the biggest mistake ever made in public health, ever made. But let me just extend that argument, if I may, Rainer, to post-vaccination, because I think it's very important that people realize here that these dramatic events that are clearly post-vaccination deaths, cerebral venous thrombosis, deep vein thrombosis in the legs, pulmonary embolism, etc. These are the grossest, most obvious, clear-cut examples that get recorded. This attack is principally mediated by a vascular attack, whichever organ you're talking about. The testis is a slightly different story, but the ones that we're hearing about, the thromboses, right? Now, thromboses don't have to be complete. Yes, if it's a complete block of a vein or an artery, you get the classic symptoms. But if you were getting just little clots in tributaries of certain veins in the head, you could get a terrible headache that's simply sloughed off as a terrible headache. But it happened, 3 days after the vaccination, and should be recorded. But many people, this is one why that VAERS system is so unreliable, because it's only recording the terribly obvious. There could be many, many complications that are partial expressions of thrombosis that are simply being sloughed off as ordinary life complaints.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it happens, there's so many adverse events in the meantime that even the mainstream media weren't able to sweep them under the rug anymore. It's entered the mainstream media, at least in the United States, Fox News, Tucker Carlson. And he reported the other day that, and this is the official numbers, the official figures, on average, 30 people a day die after vaccination. Now, of course, there's no causation proven, but this should be examined, I think, because as you rightly pointed out, only a very minute group only very few of the real adverse events are reported. Some people say it's probably around 1%, maybe a little more. But if it is around 1%, we're not talking about 30. We're talking about 3,000 people dying a day. And that is in line with what we here in Germany heard from through our whistleblower tool from people who work at the at the nursing homes. That's what we hear from Israel and all the other countries. So that's enough reason, I think, to be completely alarmed. And now that they're going after the children, yeah, with the additional information that you're giving us, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that anyone who continues with this from here on will have to be held liable, both civilly and criminally.
That's why, notices of liability can be profoundly effective at the local level to actually hand the teacher of your child or the principal, or even more important, the superintendent of the school board, a notice of liability. You cannot deny knowing that this could happen. And if it does happen, you are hereby put on notice that you are culpable, mm-hmm, by allowing this to happen on your watch. But I wanted to say one other thing about the VAERS system, Rainer. Isn't it pathetic that we're having to rely upon retrospective, you might say, random reports, lay reports, etc., etc.? If a government is going to introduce an experimental vaccine on a mass scale for something that is essentially a trivial disease, then they should be obligated to have put in place, before starting, a clear randomized sampling of people who've been vaccinated to determine what the true incidence of complications were. They've not done that. They are very culpable in not setting up a monitoring system before the experimental vaccine was introduced, which should have been a very obvious precautionary step in order to monitor what they're doing. And by the same token, I would extend that argument to the therapy side of things. If on the one hand, you're saying this is such a serious emergency that we have to have an experimental vaccine, which I disagree with, obviously. But if you're saying that on the one hand, you cannot simultaneously say to all physicians, you cannot prescribe agents that you believe may be protective or curative if they are safe agents already FDA approved. You cannot deny physicians access to safe medications if you're introducing if you're calling something an emergency, which it's not. It should be expected that if it's a true emergency that warrants an emergency vaccine program, that individual physicians should be allowed to use agents that are known to be safe.
Yeah, that is extremely puzzling.
Not specifically prohibited.
Yeah, that is extremely puzzling that we have, and we had doctors come on television in the United States, here in Germany as well, but more so in the United States, and explain about alternative medication, ivermectin being one of them, that seems to have shown very positive results without any adverse effects. It's extremely puzzling how then the governments all over the world, and the WHO, of course, how they try to I don't know how to put this, but defamation is not the right word, but how they try to explain to the general public that the only solution is vaccinations. But from all the hearings that we have conducted, from all the interviews we have done, the evidence now tells us that right from the start of this, what we now call a planned pandemic, right from the start, the ultimate goal was to get people vaccinated. The steps in between, the mask mandates, the social distancing, the lockdowns, we believe now that they were used in order to make people, to get them accustomed and to make them obedient so that ultimately they would, in fact, welcome the vaccinations. Why do I say this? Well, from what we've learned from a couple of people who used to work for the WHO, there was enormous pressure on the WHO in late January of 2020 to declare a public health emergency of international concern. Enormous pressure. They had a first emergency meeting and they couldn't agree on declaring this public health emergency of international concern because there were no cases. But they agreed that they would have a second emergency meeting 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later, there was the declaration of public health emergency of international concern, which is the only basis on which drugs, or in this case, vaccines that have not been tested can be used. They can get this emergency use authorization in the United States, and here in Europe, it was the conditional use approval. What had changed over the course of these 2 weeks? Only one thing. Drosten had introduced his test, had given it to the WHO. They had used his PCR test, and they had come up with thousands of cases. We now know from talking to people like Dr. Mike Yeadon, former vice president of Pfizer, that this is in all likelihood thousands of false positives. Apart from the fact, as you have also already pointed out, that PCR tests cannot tell you anything about infections, let alone if there's no symptoms. Apart from that fact, the way that his test was set up at 45 cycles of amplifications, I mean, the Frankfurt Public Health Agency says that they're not going to even look at anything that comes in and that was tested beyond 24 cycles of amplification. Right. Mike Yeadon tells us at 35 cycles of amplifications, you're likely to end up with, I think, 97% false positives. So yep. This is 45 cycles of amplification. That's how they got, that's how they arrived at the conclusion that we have something like a pandemic, which they don't really care about, but they wanted this public health emergency of international concern. Fake.
Well, I don't think it was just that, Rainer. I mean, you had that idiot at, I'm using the word advisedly, it's actually complimentary, that idiot at Imperial College London.
Oh,
you know, Neil Ferguson.
Yeah.
You know,
Neil Ferguson, yeah.
You know, the theoretical physicist who, you know, was pretending to be an epidemiologist. You know, he got hold of those numbers in Milan, and that's what, that's really what he plugged into his computer. And, you know, that was also something that really got attention of everyone internationally, that Armageddon was coming. I do disagree with you. I don't think there was any plandemic here.
Mm-hmm.
What I do believe is there was an artificial release from that lab in Wuhan on a pair of dirty shoes. It was on a plane to Milan faster than you could spit because of the dependence of Milan on cheap Chinese labor for the leather industry. And that's and Milan, of course, has the highest concentration of elderly people in the whole of Europe. And so they were sitting ducks, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of morphed from that. Disclosure here. I'm a Trumper, okay? I'm a fervent Trumper. I'm a disciple of Trump. I think he's the savior of democracy. However, he was dead wrong on all aspects of COVID. You can't stop it with a travel ban. It was never a China virus. It's actually got Fauci's sticky fingers all over it. It's a made in USA virus. And he thought macho Trump, you know, we can wrestle this thing to the ground. We just got to make it lucrative enough. So what company wouldn't grab your hand off if you say, look, I'm going to give you a few billion here as a gift for you to warp speed a vaccine that you can sell for billions more when you finally market it, and I'm going to give you total indemnity. Obviously, they're going to have your hand torn off, right? And so he was culpable in instituting this warp speed vaccine program that, you know, all the work had already been done on, attempted to be done with SARS vaccines, and the whole delivery system of, you know, mRNA. I mean, that had all been thoroughly worked out. It was just a matter of using a different strand of mRNA inside the capsule that had already been defined. You know, it was there for it was ready to go. So I don't think you have to be a conspiracy theorist to figure out somehow this was some Machiavellian plot. I think it's the culmination of straightforward political idiocy. You know, where they're so desperately afraid of being reelected and getting their pensions that they'll put masks on everyone and threaten them if they don't. Because, you know, my reelection and pension depends upon you stupid lot following orders.
Mm. That does make a lot of sense, actually, because if you look at politicians, that's what they're like. That's what everybody knows they're like in the meantime.
The number one rule in politics is never apologize. You don't apologize, you morph the game. And so it's morphed from masks to vaccination to vaccine passports and so on. You know, it's like the game of whack-a-mole. You know, you bang down one and, you know, 10 more pop up that you've got to, you get distracted in which one you're going to attack next. No, it's been a very, very clever political game. And the essence of what's going on politically is this. Essentially what they've done is this. They're saying privately, we created this problem, didn't we? We accept that. But you stupid buggers, you're the people going to get us off the hook by submitting your bodies to experimental vaccines. You know, we created the problem, and now you're going to get us off the hook. because you're so stupid that you're going to take the vaccine. We know that. And so they get off the hook by using us as guinea pigs in this biggest medical experiment the world's ever seen.
But then again, the experiment is not looking so good. I mean, since we're expecting quite a few of side effects. So I think, you know, what I don't really understand is they could have said, okay, we vaccinate, you know, the most, you know, the people most at risk, like the elderly and all that, and then maybe stop. So they could have had an excuse, you know, to get out because these people are now vaccinated. And now, but they're now pouring it out onto the children and to everyone and to the pregnant women and all that. And that's creating such a high amount of risk. I mean, it's outrageous. So I don't really understand why they continue playing the game. And also, you know, with regards to like maybe taking precautionary measures, like, for instance, setting up like additional hospitals for the, you know, the sick and people that we might expect like in the fall with these these cytokine storms and all that. But instead, in Berlin, for instance, they're now tearing apart some sort of like, ad hoc hospital that they created for like 24 million euros or something like that. So, I mean, why all that? You know, for me, that doesn't make any sense because they could have gotten out easier without that risk.
I think the logical continuation of that is sadly an expression of that more global process called wokeism, where the state wants to take away all personal responsibility and assume that responsibility for you to protect you from risk of all sorts. Anywhere it raises its ugly head, we will protect you from risk. Trust us. And of course, the great unwashed out there with their iPhones and water bottles and selfies, you know, oh, that's fine. Hey, I can just continue my hedonistic swirl down the drain, and life's peachy. Thank you very much. Yeah, we trust you. Thanks. Bye. And of course, here I'll extend my theory, Reiner, because I'm on a soapbox now. And that all started, of course, in our universities. If I had to put my finger on one particular thing that is causing all of society's ills, of which the reaction to COVID is merely one tiny example, it's the self-perpetuating elitism in universities that only hires their own socialist-minded faculty. Because then, subliminally, you influence the students going through, who end up as journalists and politicians, and teachers. So they go out and they teach. And they teach the kids the same thing. The kids then go back to university to get reinforced in this mentality. And it's become a self-perpetuating elite. The universities are a business. It's called bums in seats. It's nothing to do with teaching. And it's a self-perpetuating process. And if there's going to be any hope for democracy, there has to be a brutal attack on the ability of universities to manage themselves, because they're inflicting on society their particular political persuasion. And they're doing it very efficiently over a period of 20 years. And it's going to be very hard to turn back. But I think that's what's the essential feature of why it's so easy to persuade people to do things. It's because they want government to do things. They've been told to expect that. Yes. Government will look after me from cradle to grave. They'll protect me when I'm crossing the road. They'll protect me from everything. Thank you very much. And we're like lambs to the slaughter, saluting in their general direction. And one of those things is vaccination. Exactly. They said it's safe. Four letters, one word, safe. It's safe.
I agree.
So I'm going to take it. I trust government.
That's precisely the problem. It's our system of education is a complete shambles. We had a number of psychologists, because we couldn't believe how most of the general public are simply going along and cheerfully towards the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
We couldn't believe this because 10 years ago, some of the people who have been planning for this were actually completely certain that this would happen, that they would be able to, I don't know, manipulate the masses in such a way that they would act this way. And now they are acting in this way. And one of the, a professor of, they call it educational, he's a philosopher. He's an educational philosopher. And he says, he said the same thing that you're saying. For the last 30 years or so, he says, our system of education has morphed into something completely, it's now standing on its head. It used to be geared in such a way as to educate people who would be able to ask questions, who would be able to discuss different opinions. And now we're down to don't ask any questions, just follow orders, and don't deal with other opinions, just follow our opinion.
Well, it follows the socialist / communist playbook.
I suppose so, yeah.
First you infiltrate the institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they've done that with remarkable stealth and efficiency.
Yeah, unfortunately. But now we're on to them, Roger. Now we're on to them. This changes the whole ballgame. Well, this was both a pleasure and an honor, Roger. I don't want to cut you short, though. Is there something that we should be discussing that you think is important so that the rest of the world should know it?
Yes. The short version. Don't believe anything you're told. It's all a pack of lies. Nothing works. Nothing could work, nothing did work, and nothing will work. We rely upon you, the common sense general public, to act in ways that are so much more effective than government's intervention in all of this. And you are the solution. Your guts are telling you the right thing. This is all nonsense. And we will survive it.
Excellent. This could have come from Lord Sumption. I think he's in complete agreement, and I am too, by the way. Thank you so much, Roger. This was really good.
My pleasure.
Really, really good. We'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have got to know you. Thank you very much.